Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke, whom some have likened to Bobby Kennedy, is polling among the top contenders in the Democratic presidential primary. He visited San Diego this past week, speaking out on the issues. Hear highlights of what he had to say on today's show. An arrest has been made in a racial threat on Snapchat made against San Diego State's black community. Hear what steps the campus is taking to make SDSU safer for all minorities. The 19-year-old shooter who opened fire in a Poway synagogue on Passover has been charged with murder, and his family has voiced horror at his actions. We'll have details. Today we'll also have a report on the amazing acts of heroism taken by members of the congregation to help save lives in the face of the cowardly attack against unarmed synagogue worshipers. San Diego supervisors have approved another $25 million for affordable housing, and we'll have details on how they're planning to spend that money. Newly elected Supervisor Jim Desmond has launched a revitalization committee for Borrego Springs. He has a meeting coming up for that community on May 7th, and he wants to hear from Borrego residents about issues on their minds. A measles outbreak has caused widespread quarantines in Los Angeles, and now health officials warn the outbreak could spread to San Diego County. Now, if you were born between 1957 and 1965, heads up, your vaccinations may not be effective, county health officials warn. Find out what you should know to protect yourself and your family on today's show. A driver who ran down a young boy on a bicycle in El Cajon and then fled the scene has been sentenced. The East County Performing Arts Center has a new name. Find out what it is and why they changed the name on today's show. On Destination East County, hear about some amazing events coming up across our region, including festivals, concerts, a wine and food tasting event in Alpine, Wild in the Country at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, and the Manzanita High Mountain Rendezvous, where you can meet mountain men and more. It's springtime. Time to lace up your hiking boots and hit the trails while those wildflowers are still in bloom. The county is offering guided hikes ranging from easy strolls to a warrior challenge hike coming up through the merry month of May. We'll have some national news stories later on today from Public News Service, including a report on the United Nations World Press Freedom Day and why First Amendment freedom of the press rights are threatened right here in the United States. Before you fire up a Memorial Day weekend campfire, we'll have some campfire safety tips for you from Cal Fire. And with the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' competition coming up on May 25th, we thought it would be a good time to re-air our coverage of some championship fiddling at a prior competition in Julian. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Beto O'Rourke, the charismatic Texas congressman and Democratic presidential candidate, likened by some to Robert F. Kennedy, stopped off in San Diego for a town hall meeting at the Jacobs Center on April 29th. He spoke briefly in Spanish, then switched to English, addressing his landmark proposal to address climate change. He touted his 6 years on the House Veterans Affairs Committee, working to help those who served our country, also addressing issues including homelessness, immigration, equal rights, health care, and more. He denounced the politics of hate, stating,
"We do not need to fear one another. We do not need to hate one another. We don't need to buy in or be complicit in the racism coming from the highest positions of trust and power right now."
He criticized President Donald Trump for referring to asylum seekers as an infestation.
"An infestation is the way that you would describe a cockroach, something that you want to kill."
He asked, "How in the world can the president not only cage those kids and deport their moms, but cut off $500 million in funding to help the suffering Northern Triangle countries of Central America?" He said such foreign aid should be doubled for violence prevention, to help those families to stay where they are so they do not have to flee. O'Rourke praised those who showed courage and helped save others during the Poway synagogue shooting, adding,
"We must stand up against the hatred that we see in this country right now. A president who has described the Ku Klux Klan, white supremacists, and neo-Nazis as very fine people."
He noted that 30,000 Americans a year are losing their lives in mass shootings in houses of worship, concerts, schools, and other venues, and leveled criticism at the NRA and the federal government for blocking any attempts to stem gun violence. Asked what message he has for disillusioned Republicans, O'Rourke cited his years as an El Paso city councilman who balanced budgets, made sure police and fire were valued, and held town hall meetings. He also listed bills he's co-authored with Republicans in Congress to expand mental health care for veterans, upgrade ports of entry, and protect public lands. When he ran for Senate, narrowly losing to incumbent Ted Cruz, he claims to have received more votes than any Democrat in Texas ever, increasing youth turnout by 500%. On foreign policy, he called for an end to wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, and faulted Trump for abandoning U.S. alliances with NATO and the European Union. On climate change, he stated, "All of this will become exponentially worse for our kids and the generations that follow unless we act now through conscientious capitalism. Move from fossil fuels to renewable energy. Plant more crops to take carbon dioxide out of the air." He called for cooperation at all levels, among all parties, to attain those goals, adding, "We must be known by our ambitions, our aspirations, the work, the service, the sacrifice that we employ in order to achieve them." He pledged to actively campaign for the Equal Rights Amendment, which lacks just one state for ratification decades after its introduction. On education, he cited high turnover in the teaching profession and said teachers are not paid enough. He called for investment in free community college education and apprenticeships, as well as reducing debt for college students. He denounced institutional racism, noting that white Americans have 10 times more wealth than African Americans today. He backs free health care, including mental health services, and more efforts to help the homeless. He supports more inclusionary zoning to provide affordable housing. Beto O'Rourke, whose full name is Robert Francis O'Rourke, indicated, despite the growth of social media, he still believes face-to-face meetings are the most useful for healing America in a time of divisions. He has vowed not to accept any money from special interests, including political action committees and corporations, adding that he only seeks support from human beings. Reporting on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
A suspect has been arrested for allegedly making criminal threats via Snapchat toward a member of San Diego State University's Black community. Martin J. Ruiz, an SDSU student not currently enrolled in classes, was identified by the University Police Department within 48 hours after they were notified of the incident. Officers worked quickly to identify the suspect based on his description in his video and social media account handle. SDSU Police Chief Josh Mays says he wants to reaffirm that we will continue to take allegations of hate crime seriously and immediately devote resources to the pursuit of the investigation. And he adds, our goal is to promote a safe and secure environment for all members of our community. The San Diego County District Attorney's Office has a specialized unit dedicated to prosecuting hate crimes. The office is currently reviewing this case. Campus President Adela De La Torre says, freedom from discrimination, harassment, and violence are basic fundamental rights, and we refute all instances of intolerance and abusive behaviors. SDSU Chief Diversity Officer J. Luke Wood said the university has implemented a number of changes to increase support for all students, faculty, and staff, and help enhance campus safety in the wake of several recent racial incidents. On April 11th, the University Senate unanimously passed a resolution which, among other things, calls on SDSU to foster a safer climate for Black students and improve equity among Black faculty. The Provost Professors Initiative was launched this academic year and is led by faculty members trained to provide programs to help counter bias and discrimination. Now, in response to vandalism that occurred at the Black Resource Center last month, university police have increased their presence and patrols around the area, and extra security measures have been implemented. Over 900 SDSU community members signed a campus-wide pledge supporting the Black community on campus and other minorities. Wood concludes, every single member of our community should be free from discrimination, harassment, and violence, adding, hate and bias-driven acts may target one, but they impact us all, and our community's response with positive action is exactly the momentum we need to evolve our collective humanity. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
District Attorney Summer Steffen says she may pursue the death penalty against accused Poway Synagogue shooter John T. Ernest. The 19-year-old Cal State San Marcos student is accused of one count of murder with special circumstances for a hate crime and three counts of attempted murder for using an AR assault rifle when he opened fire inside the Shabbat of Poway Synagogue during a Passover celebration. He is also charged with arson at a house of worship for setting fire to the Islamic Center of Escondido. Ernest's parents have refused to pay for his legal defense, so he is being represented by a public defender. He entered a not guilty plea. Ernest published a manifesto online the morning of the attack, filled with hate speech against Jews, as well as a confession to burning the mosque. He remains in custody without bail. His parents have issued a statement voicing shock and sadness at their 19-year-old son's actions. Quote, "Our sadness pales in comparison to the grief and anguish our son has caused for so many innocent people," they add. "To our great shame, he is now a part of the history of evil that has been perpetrated on Jewish people for centuries." The Ernests say their son was raised in a family with five children that encouraged love and faith and rejected hate. "How our son was attracted to such darkness is a terrifying mystery to us," they added in a statement released by the family's attorney, which also asked for privacy. The statement indicates the family is cooperating with investigators. Yosef Miller, with the Islamic Society of North County, says he was saddened to learn that the same person who burned the mosque later attacked the synagogue. "It'll take a community effort for all of us to move forward in this. We can't isolate the incident to a Jewish incident or a Muslim incident," Miller says, 10 News reports. "It's an incident against all of us, and that's the only way we can get through." At Poway High School, mourners filled the football stadium Monday night for a candlelight vigil to commemorate the victims of the synagogue shooting. A funeral was held Monday for Lori Kay, 60, who sacrificed her own life to save the rabbi who lost a finger due to the shooting. The rabbi has been released from the hospital along with the other two victims, a man who led children to safety, and his 8-year-old niece. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
When a gunman opened fire on unarmed worshippers and a rabbi inside the Shabbat Congregation Synagogue in Poway during a Passover celebration, his victims reacted with courage and acts of heroism, saving many lives. About 100 people were in the synagogue, but only 4 were struck by bullets, according to Sheriff Bill Gore. 60-year-old Lori Gilbert Kay, a founding member of the synagogue and one of its major philanthropic supporters, jumped between the gunman and Rabbi Israel Goldstein, sacrificing her own life to save the spiritual leader, CNN reports. She'd come to say a Kaddish prayer for the dead in memory of her late mother, but now that prayer will be recited in her memory. Rabbi Goldstein raised his hands and bullets tore through his fingers. He told NBC, "I saw a group of children in the banquet hall, including my granddaughter. Not even knowing that my fingers were blown off, I got the kids and everyone out of the sanctuary safely." Outside, despite his bloody wounds, the rabbi continued to deliver his Passover message and told his congregation, "We are united." The rabbi says he's praying for healing during this time of pain and grief, adding, "Everybody needs to be a hero. Everybody needs to step up and do something in the face of terror." Another hero is Almag Perez. The 34-year-old man gathered up as many children as he could and ushered them to safety. As he ran with the children from the shooter, he received shrapnel injuries in his leg, but is expected to recover. The fourth shooting victim is Perez's niece, 8-year-old Noya Dahan, who had shrapnel injuries to her face and leg. She has been transferred to Rady Children's Hospital and is expected to fully recover physically, though emotional scars may be daunting. Ironically, the Dahan family moved to the United States from Israel several years ago after Noya's parents were injured by rockets, living close to the Gaza border. But several years ago, their home here was sprayed with swastikas. Now, Noya's father, Israel Dahan, told CNN, "Noya and the family's other children no longer feel safe in America either." He says the children are asking, why are we staying here? Kay's husband, a physician, was at the synagogue, too, when the shooting began. He was asked to come to the aid of a woman who had been shot. He rushed to the fallen woman and began performing CPR, but fainted upon realizing it was his wife. Kay's friend, Ranit Lev, says Kay didn't die a senseless death, but instead drew attention to anti-Semitism as well as to the need to bring good into this world. She says, if God put an angel on this planet, it would have been Lori. Kay, the only fatality in the shooting, leaves behind a 22-year-old daughter, as well as her husband. A GoFundMe account to help the survivors of the attack at the Chabad Congregation Synagogue and Kay's family has been established. Over $47,000 has been raised as of our show taping deadline. Another hero is Oscar Stewart, an Iraq War veteran who normally sits up front at the synagogue, but on Saturday he decided to sit in the back row, a decision he attributes to God. When he heard gunfire and others ran for safety, Stewart did the opposite, charging toward the gunman in the foyer. Several feet away from the shooter, Stewart says he screamed as long and loud as he could, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. The gunman appeared startled and let go of his weapon, which dangled from the shooter's sling as he turned and fled. Stewart says, I chased him out of the synagogue. He pursued the gunman to his getaway vehicle and began punching at it. Then an off-duty Border Patrol agent who was working as a security guard at the synagogue told Stewart to move out of the way, saying, clear back, I have a gun. The guard then fired 5 rounds and struck the getaway vehicle, according to Sheriff Bill Gore. The shooter, 19-year-old Cal State San Marcos student John Ernest, managed to drive away but was arrested a short time later. The sheriff says the FBI is aiding in an investigation to confirm that Ernest is the author of a hate-filled manifesto posted online shortly before the deadly shooting. The manifesto included white supremacist racial hate speech and Bible verses, along with a threat to live stream the shooting at the Poway Synagogue, which didn't happen, as well as claiming credit for a recent arson fire at an Escondido mosque. Despite the terror and bloodshed, the remaining congregation members, after debriefings by law enforcement officials, refused to allow the mayhem to halt their holiday services. Their courage in the face of a cowardly terrorist act will be long remembered. Shabbat.org News reports, later that afternoon, the police allowed the congregants to regroup in the nearby home of Rabbi Mendel Goldstein, where the prayers were concluded. The service included Yizkor, in which the souls of the departed loved ones are recalled. Having been informed that Lori Gilbert Kay had succumbed, they said a special prayer for her soul. Following Hasidic custom, as the day came to an end, they sat down for a festive meal known as Moshiach's meal, which included joyous singing and dancing. Poway Mayor Steve Voss joined them, along with other guests. Mayor Voss has denounced the shootings as a hate crime targeting the Jewish community and pledged support for the victims. He praised people present who took action, adding, those brave people certainly prevented this from being a much worse tragedy. Also condemning the senseless hate that led to the murder of Lori Gilbert Kay solely for her religious beliefs, Rabbi Yonah Fradkin, executive director of Shabbat of San Diego, concludes, we strongly believe that love is exponentially more powerful than hate. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
County supervisors have voted to spend an additional $25 million to build more affordable housing units in our region. 2 years ago, the county established the Innovative Housing Initiative to increase the region's supply of affordable housing. An initial $25 million launched the program, making money available to developers to build or rehab housing for low-income households and vulnerable populations. So far, that's resulted in 453 permanent affordable housing units available from the first $12 million spent. Chairwoman Diane Jacobs says the county expects, when the first $25 million is all spent, a total of 1,000 affordable housing units will be built. The new $25 million allocation is expected to do the same, creating a total of 2,000 affordable housing units. The units created will go to homeless families, families in need, homeless veterans, and veterans with special needs, seniors and older adults with very low incomes, people with developmental disabilities, people with mental illness, those recovering from substance abuse, and domestic violence survivors. Supervisor Greg Cox acknowledges that California is an expensive place to live, adding, from South County to East County to North County, families are finding it harder to keep up with the rising rents, or finding homes that they can afford. The Board of Supervisors also voted to allow the Health and Human Services Agency to apply for state emergency funds to help those who are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless. That could bring in up to $1.4 million to be used for rental assistance, housing relocation, and prevention of homelessness. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Jinks.
Newly elected County Supervisor Jim Desmond has been holding a series of community revitalization meetings in his district. Now he is starting a Borrego Springs Community Revitalization Committee to bring public resources to Borrego Springs. On Tuesday, May 7th, a public meeting will be held at 10 a.m. in the Borrego Library's community room. The public is encouraged to attend. The purpose of the committee is to support community leadership and collaboration while connecting Borrego Springs to the county resources necessary for solving issues identified by the community. Supervisor Desmond and representatives from county departments, who will also be there, want to hear from the community on important issues so that work can begin towards solutions. Reporting for East County Magazine from Borrego Springs, this is John Fistier.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. A major outbreak of measles, also called rubella, in Los Angeles and other U.S. cities could soon spread to San Diego, health officials warn. Los Angeles County health officials ordered over 1,000 students and staff at the University of California and Cal State Los Angeles to stay home and self-quarantine due to measles exposure, the LA Times reported on Friday. The number has fluctuated as some students provide vaccination records and as new cases are reported. Travelers at Los Angeles International Airport, or LAX, on April 1st may also have been exposed to the highly contagious disease. Measles sickens 90% of those who are exposed if they haven't been vaccinated. By contrast, two doses of the vaccine provides 97% protection. Now, measles had been declared eradicated in the United States in 2000, but the disease reappeared after unvaccinated travelers became exposed overseas and brought the disease back home. Before the measles vaccine became available, most children got the disease. Each year, over 48,000 people in the U.S. were hospitalized. 1,000 people a year suffered brain swelling from measles, and measles killed 400 to 500 Americans every year. People born between 1957 and 1989 may not have full immunities, because initially only one shot was given. Later it was found that a second booster shot dramatically increased immunity. To be sure that you have immunities to measles, you can request a blood test from your doctor and ask for a booster shot if needed. Federal health officials blame the current outbreak on parents refusing to vaccinate their children, partly due to a debunked study that falsely linked the vaccine to autism. Dr. Wilma Wooten, San Diego County public health official, says vaccines are safe and effective. They do not cause autism. That claim has been disproven. And even President Donald Trump, who once touted anti-vax misinformation, last week reversed course. Amid the national measles outbreak, President Trump urged Americans to, quote, get the shots. Measles begins with a high fever, rash, and can cause serious respiratory symptoms or, in rare cases, encephalitis, brain swelling, as well as death. It can be particularly dangerous for babies and young children. The vast majority of cases currently are in unvaccinated people. Vaccination is also important to protect those who cannot get a measles vaccine, including very young babies, people with certain immune disorders, and those allergic to eggs. The San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency has issued an alert this week asking the local medical community to be on the lookout for potential measles cases and to report suspected measles cases to the department immediately. Now, if you suspect that you or a family member may have measles, health officials ask that you stay home and don't go to a doctor's office, clinic, or hospital where you may infect many others. Instead, please call your physician. Parents can obtain the vaccines for their children through their regular medical provider. People with no medical insurance can get vaccinated at a county public health center for free. Local retail pharmacies also offer some vaccinations for a fee. For more information on vaccines, you can call the Health and Human Services Agency Immunization Branch at 866-358-2966. That number again is 866-358-2966, or visit sdiz.org. To find the nearest county public health center or community clinic, you can call 211.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Fistier. Courtney Weber has been sentenced to 3 years in prison for hitting a 9-year-old bicyclist in El Cajon on October 5th. The 25-year-old woman pled guilty to the crime. Court records indicate she had previously lost her driver's license. East County Magazine photographer Robert Gehr witnessed the accident near West Main and Sunshine. He raced to comfort the young victim, also providing a description of the vehicle to police, which he said ran a red light. The boy suffered neck and back injuries, but fortunately survived the ordeal and is now back in school. Surveillance video showed Weber's blue Honda Fit fleeing the scene. The 25-year-old woman was arrested the next day at her lakeside home, where she was found hiding under a bed, according to Lieutenant Stephen Kirk.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
When the East County Performing Arts Center reopens this year under management of Live Nation, it will have a new name, Magnolia Performing Arts Center. Magnolia is the city of El Cajon's official flower, and its image appears in the city's logo. The center, located on Main Street, is accessed off the Magnolia Avenue exit from Interstate 8. Live Nation wanted the name changed to make the center a destination for all Southern California, avoiding a regional reference. The theater opened in 1997 and was widely praised for its excellent acoustics, but the building fell into disrepair, needing costly upgrades including a new roof, heating, and an air conditioning system. The facility has been shut down for more than a decade while the city grappled with a solution. The city and Live Nation have retained Rios Clemente Hale Studios, an architectural firm familiar with contemporary performing arts center designs, to oversee the remodeling of the 1,200-seat theater. Construction is being managed by the Weiland Corporation. Renovations underway including increasing the number of seats, adding a VIP lounge, and refurbishing the lobby to add a bar, merchandising area, and an elevator. According to the city, Live Nation's arrival is expected to be a game-changer for downtown El Cajon that will bring nationally renowned acts to the heart of the city. Live Nation plans to feature at least 50 events in the first year and 65 events by the fifth year of operation. Live Nation, which claims to be the largest concert promoter in the world, also manages the House of Blues in San Diego and locally the Mattress Firm Amphitheater in Chula Vista. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
May activities include El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert, the Coyote Music Festival at Cuyamaca College, Classic Cruise Night Centennial Season in downtown El Cajon, Vintage Alpine, the Lilac Festival in Santa Isabel, Sky Tours in Julian, Open Farm Day at Oasis Camel Dairy, Wild in the Country at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, America on Main Street in El Cajon, a Gunsmoke fundraiser for a local Lions Club in El Cajon, and the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest.
El Cajon's popular dinner and a concert series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. The season opens on May 3rd with Sully and the Blue-Eyed Band. Other May performers include Wild Heart, Stars in the Water, Santana Ways, and Polyester Express. Shows will continue all summer long. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the many restaurants nearby before attending the concert. For full details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Some of the region's top young musical talents will converge on May 4th at Cuyamaca College when the 11th annual Coyote Music Festival returns to the Rancho San Diego campus's Grand Lawn. The family-friendly community festival features groups with styles ranging from dream pop to alternative folk and R&B playing on two stages from noon to 4 p.m. Food trucks and vendors will be on hand too. The entirely student-run event culminates a semester-long music industry seminar class that covers everything involved in staging a music festival, including marketing, promotions, production, booking, staging, and sound engineering. For a schedule of performers, you can visit cuyamaca.edu.
El Cajon's Classic Cruise Nights is celebrating its centennial season. You can view classic cars each Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. On May 1st, Tri-5 Chevys will be featured, so guests are encouraged to wear your poodle skirts and leather jackets. May 8th is Corvette Cruise Night, and on May 15th, it's Kids Day to Play. May 22nd is Military Appreciation Day, and May 29th is Convertible Night. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
The 29th Annual Vintage Alpine, a fundraiser for the Alpine Kiwanis Club, will be held on May 5th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs. Described as a wine and food experience in the country, this event features 32 wineries from California and around the world, plus tastes from restaurants countywide. The event also includes live music and a silent auction in a beautiful garden setting. For tickets and details, visit vintagealpine.org.
The Lilac Festival continues at Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel, just outside Julian, each weekend through May 12th. Lilac cuttings and plants are available for purchase. You can also sign up for activities including candle making, hay rides, a petting zoo, reptile show, jug band performance, archery, tomahawk throwing, and more. For full details, you can check fortcross.com.
The Observers Inn in Julian is offering guided tours of the night sky at its astronomical observatory houses and research-grade telescopes on Saturday, May 11th, from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. Each sky tour is unique and may include planets, star clusters, nebula, galaxies, comets, and the moon. Advance reservations are required, and there is a fee for those who are not staying overnight at the inn. For reservations, you can call 760-765-0088 or visit observersinn.com/skytours.htm.
Paul Combs and Melanie Grinnell will perform a jazz saxophone and piano concert on May 12th. From 3 to 4 p.m. at the Mission Trails Church. The concert series was formerly held at Mission Trails Regional Park, but has relocated to the Mission Trails Church with monthly Sunday concerts scheduled. You can find a full listing of upcoming concerts at the Second Sunday Community Concerts page on Facebook.
Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona will host an open farm day on May 12th from 1 to 4 p.m. Guests can visit the friendly camels, enjoy a bird show, ride a camel, see Sheep Town, shop in the Camel Products gift shop, and take cool selfies with camels. For more information, you can visit CamelDairy.com.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears, an exotic animal rescue facility in Alpine, invites you to get wild and support their nonprofit at Wild in the Country on May 18th from 2 to 6 p.m. Enjoy al fresco dining and live music in the company of the sanctuary's animals. You can also bid in live and silent auctions. You can find tickets and details at lionstigersandbears.org.
El Cajon invites you to the city's 6th annual America on Main Street on May 18th from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. The event fosters respect of diverse ethnic and historical groups in the community. This year, the theme is Out of the World, recognizing the 50th anniversary of the 1969 moon landing. Other highlights include a tribute to Armed Forces Day, a naturalization ceremony for new American citizens, a scavenger hunt, over 150 booths including foods from around the world, face painting, balloon artists, a space and science area, first responder safety zone, carnival rites, and live entertainment including over 30 bands, community groups, and street performers. To learn more, visit AmericaOnMainStreet.org.
The El Cajon Valley Host Lions and the Winchester Widows will present their annual fundraiser, Gunsmoke, on Saturday, May 18th at El Cajon Elks Lodge 1812 in El Cajon from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. The event includes live Western and bluegrass music, a silent auction, gambling chips, and food, all to support the Lions' community services for the underprivileged, and a program that provides eyeglasses to people in need.
Julian's annual Fiddle and Pickin' competition will be held on May 25th from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Julian's historic town hall. Hosted by the California Old Time Fiddlers Association, the competition draws nationally known talent and is open to all ages in fiddle, mandolin, banjo, and guitar. Details for this family-friendly event are available at sandiegofiddler.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section of our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals and events and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
Spring is here. Time to lace up your hiking boots and hit the trails. The county is offering a series of special hikes in county parks during May, from leisurely strolls to a rugged warrior hike challenge. On May 4th, park staff will lead a spring summit hike in Vulcan Mountain Wilderness Preserve to the top of Vulcan Mountain, a strenuous 5-mile trip with wildflowers in bloom. On May 5th, you can hike with a ranger in Otay Lakes Park on an easy to moderate hike of less than 2 miles. Dictionary Hill, a new county preserve in Spring Valley, is offering hikes to the summit each Sunday in May to view panoramic San Diego vistas and see a rare butterfly ecosystem. At Oasis County Preserve in Lakeside, Sunday strolls throughout May, including a moderately challenging walk with views of the San Vicente Reservoir. El Monte County Park in Lakeside has early morning birdwatching walks on Saturday, May 11th. On May 18th, there's also a guided hike at Dos Picos Park in Ramona, where you can learn about native plants and animal species. Then, on May 25th, a ranger will lead a hike all the way across the Santa Isabel East Preserve, an 8-mile hike through green hills abloom with wildflowers. Also, on May 25th, the county invites you to celebrate Memorial Day with a warrior hike challenge up to El Cajon Mountain, also known as El Capitan in Lakeside. County staff and San Diego River Park Foundation will lead 3 levels of hikes, including a 2-mile boot camp hike, a 6-mile recon level, and a 12-mile warrior level extreme hike. Refreshments will be provided. On May 26th, Flint Springs County Park features a hike up Flint Park with a discussion of chaparral environment. To find details on all of these events, visit the San Diego County Parks and Recreation website at sdparks.org or the San Diego County Parks and Recreation Facebook page. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Jinks.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, from the mountains to the sea.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, May the 3rd, 2019. I'm Mike Clifford. It's World Press Freedom Day. We take a look at what's up in the USA. Also on our Friday rundown, climate change at the top of the legislative agenda in New England. Plus, have you heard about the device that could save millions of fish? Topping our news today is United Nations World Press Freedom Day. Events are planned across the globe, but journalists and other experts see recent events as more proof that Americans should consider how to protect their own press freedoms.
Janine Relly, a professor at the University of Arizona School of Journalism, says the advent of social media and the current sharp red-blue political divide have created serious challenges to the free flow of information for Americans.
In the global rankings of press freedom, the U.S. has slowly fallen. It's been over a couple of years, and some of the reasons are economic, just the fragmentation of media and the lack of sustainability in some cases.
Relly says a decade ago, the erosion of press freedoms was studied mostly in other countries as corrupt government officials and others tried to intimidate reporters. In the extreme, she notes that more than 50 journalists worldwide were murdered last year while doing their jobs. Mark Richardson reporting.
If you want to learn more, you can check out online at pen.org. Fighting climate change at the top of the legislative priorities list for many Connecticut environmental groups. More from Andrea Sears.
The Connecticut chapter of the Sierra Club wants state lawmakers to promote policies like requiring 100% renewable energy by 2035 and setting a net zero target for greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. According to chapter chair Anne Gadois, those are goals that can be met.
The way we could do this is moving away from fossil fuels, moving away from gas, moving away from oil, moving away from coal to renewable energy such as wind power, solar power.
Bills have been introduced to expand procurement of energy from offshore wind and to improve net metering of solar power. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
And Tennessee lawmakers have passed controversial bills that would give some parents vouchers to send their children to private schools.
The Tennessee Education Savings Account Act now heads to the governor's desk. It would give parents in two of the state's highest population districts up to $7,300 a year for private school tuition and expenses. Brad Fiskus is a former public school teacher and board member with the group Pastors for Tennessee Children. He says other states have tried similar school voucher programs and have ended up funneling millions of dollars in taxpayer money away from public schools.
If we look at other states, what we find is a state like Indiana, over the last 7 years, is projected to spend $685 million on educational savings accounts programs. That money is then being drawn out of what would have gone to the local school districts.
Supporters of the voucher idea say low-income parents should have the option to send their kids to private schools that they couldn't afford without financial assistance. But opponents point out that vouchers don't cover all the cost of a private school education, creating built-in hardships for some families. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
A new MIT study aims to capture how much people would pay for free online services like Facebook, Wikipedia, and YouTube. More on that from Laura Rosbrow. Tell them.
The researchers' premise is that because a country's gross domestic product measures spending, it fails to include much of the digital economy, which is free. To calculate this gap, they asked 65,000 people in online surveys what they would need to be paid to stop using various digital services for 1 month. Respondents in the U.S. said, for instance, they'd want $48 on average to give up using Facebook for a month. Study co-author Avinash Kalis says he didn't anticipate the responses.
We were really surprised by the magnitude of these numbers. We did not expect them to be as high as we thought.
The study offers a new category of GDP, known as GDP-B for benefit, to try to quantify the economic impact of services that aren't included in the traditional GDP. It's part of a growing body of research that suggests the whole concept of gross domestic product may need an update.
Finally, our Tramell Gomes reports the public can weigh in on fishing boats using a device that could save millions of deep water fish from dying of the bends during catch and release.
Fishermen often discard fish that aren't their target species when they exceed catch limits or when the fish are too small. Federal research says of the 6 reef fish species caught most in the eastern Gulf of Mexico, about 11% that are thrown back die after release. That's more than 7.5 million black sea bass in the South Atlantic from 2012 to 2016. Captain Jimmy Hull, a commercial fisherman in Ormond Beach, says those fish suffer a preventable fate, similar to what can happen to scuba divers who ascend too quickly.
When you bring them to the surface, all of the gases in their body and all of their organs expand and blow up. And so the effects of this can be it'll kill the animal. Or they won't be able to swim back down when you release them.
The fish can make their way back safely to deep water using a weighted clip called a descender. Hull thinks it should be a required device on anglers' boats. And the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council is taking public comment on the proposal through May 10th.
The proposed rule would only require fishermen to have these devices available for use on their vessels. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for wrapping up your week, News and Cruising with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
As Californians make their Memorial Day weekend and summer vacation plans, Cal Fire and federal fire agencies want to ensure that vacationers obtain necessary campfire permits and learn how to have a campfire safely. The California Wildfire Coordination Group, or CWCG, has unveiled a new fire prevention website, PreventWildfireCA.org, which for the first time offers an online campfire permit section. Cal Fire Director and Chief Ken Pilmlott says, "The new online system makes it easier for Californians to get a permit while still taking the time to learn how to have a campfire safely." He adds, "It is critical that a responsible adult be in attendance at your campfire at all times, and that it is completely extinguished before you leave to avoid sparking a wildfire. One less spark means one less wildfire." Fire officials from the CWCG, an interagency wildfire group comprised of local, state, and federal fire agencies, including Cal Fire, spent months creating the new system, which includes a short video and test prior to issuing the permit. While permits are still available at any Cal Fire, U.S. Forest Service, or BLM station or office, the online option is a quick and easy way to obtain a permit before beginning any trip in California. All a person needs is a computer with internet access and a printer. After watching a brief video on proper campfire techniques, the applicant will take a short quiz about the video and then receive their printable permit for free. Cal Fire reminds everyone that fire safety plays an important role outdoors, especially when it comes to campfires and outdoor cooking. Many unattended and improperly extinguished campfires have resulted in wildfires. With California in a severe drought and extremely dry conditions, not taking the time to ensure you have completely extinguished your campfire could result in a devastating wildfire. Campfires can also be extremely dangerous for children, so they should never be allowed to play around them or outdoor cooking appliances. Devastating burn injuries are all too common when these safety rules are not followed. Just a little forethought could protect you and your family. Here are some simple tips to ensure a safe campfire. Obtain a campfire permit and make sure there are not fire restrictions in the area. Use only approved and established campgrounds and campfire rings. Locate the campfire a safe distance away from tents, trees, or buildings. Clear the area around your campfire down to soil 5 feet from the fire's edge. Never let children use or play with lighter fluid or have them start a campfire. Completely extinguish campfires before leaving or going to bed. To obtain an online campfire permit or to learn more fire prevention tips on the One Less Spark, One Less Wildfire campaign, visit www.preventwildfireca.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
Each year, the town of Julian comes alive with the sounds of music, fiddle music, along with banjos, guitars, mandolins, and mountain dulcimers at the annual Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest.
This year's competition will be held on May 25th at the Julian Town Hall.
Recently, we're seeing a revival of interest in the art of fiddling and, more broadly, a renaissance in traditional music both regionally and nationally. Avery Ellisman is the district representative from the California State Old Time Fiddlers Association, which started 40 years ago. Locally, there are now around 60 members, on a mission to enhance appreciation for and involvement in old-time fiddling. He says there's been a huge bump in sales of acoustic instruments nationally. According to the National Association of Music Manufacturers, and locally, two major nationally known musical instrument manufacturers, Taylor Guitar and Deering Banjo, are both adding staff here in East County. Baby boomers have the money and the time to rediscover the joys of just fiddling around, a pastime that evokes bygone days when life was simpler and the pace of living was slower, with time to listen, learn, and make some music of your own. Ellisman says of fiddling, "This is the music of the people," adding, "One person sits with and teaches another." Fiddling is most prevalent in rural areas, also a popular pastime to while away time during inclement weather. It's what people did for entertainment, kids, long before the advent of radio, TV, or the internet. Ellisman says, "I consider music to be one of the highest forms of human celebration, a celebration of life. Fiddle music is infectious in a very positive way. The world needs more of that. Though played on the same instrument as a violin," he adds, "fiddle music calls you to dance." Julian's old-time fiddle and pickin' contest has its roots in a Julian banjo and fiddle competition that started over 60 years ago. For many years, it was run by the Julian Lions Club. But as the club's membership aged, interest in hosting competitions waned. The focus shifted to entertainment, and eventually the event dwindled. Ellisman runs the Julian Family Fiddle Camp each spring to teach fiddling skills to the next generation. So he asked the Lions to partner with his group and the State Old-Time Fiddlers Association, but, he says, the Lions declined. So Ellisman turned to the community instead, asking the local Chamber of Commerce and local merchants to support a new and revitalized competition. The community agreed, and the competition has grown ever since. It's now a 2-day event, encouraging visitors to spend the night and help boost Julian's local economy. Ellisman calls Julian the jewel of East County, noting that the event draws people from across the West and as far away as Alaska. The first modern-day Julian Fiddle and Pickin contest was held in 2014. Fiddling refers to bowed instruments, while picking is for unbowed instruments such as the guitar, mandolin, banjo, and mountain dulcimer. Ellisman notes proudly, "We have kids from age 6 up to age 86, and they're playing together. It's a wonderful way to bridge the generations." Before, Julian's events were not traditional fiddle contests, but now they are. Each competitor must perform 3 elements, a hoedown, a waltz, and a piece of the musician's choice, such as a jig, a polka, or something else. Competitors can compete in age-based categories or in an open competition that any age can enter. The open competition is considered the premier event, with bragging rights for winners who beat all comers. At the 2016 competition, Ellisman's 16-year-old daughter, Shira Ellisman, competed for the first time in the open competition category. Early in the day, youngsters competed, and then in the afternoon, the open picking competition was held, followed by the open fiddling division. Announcer Dwight Warden explained that the history of fiddling goes back to the 1700s in America. Thomas Jefferson was an avid fiddler. Fiddling gained popularity again in the 1900s, thanks to Henry Ford, who liked fiddling so much he had fiddle competitions in all of his dealerships. But then fiddling events shifted to hokum and show fests, with people playing fiddles behind their heads or beating on instruments with broom straws, Warden recalls. More recently, the pendulum has shifted back to traditional fiddling styles that popularized the genre to begin with. In the 1950s, a major competition in Idaho put the focus back on musicianship, and the modern fiddle competition was born. All 3 pieces must be played within just 4 minutes, and no hokum is allowed.
Now, a couple of years ago,
Shira Ellisman opened up the fiddling competition playing Sally Johnson for her hoedown entry, followed by Morningstar Waltz and Don't Let Your Gal Go Down. And here's a little bit of what this talented fiddler sounded like.
Thank you.
The local teenager's teacher is Luke Price, a graduate of the Berklee School of Music, who is also a two-time winner of the National Fiddle Championship. After Shirey was finished, the announcer exclaimed, "She's got a future ahead of her." The competition was stiff, with many other talented performers. After the contest, three of the fiddle judges also performed, Matthew Hartz and Luke Price, both multiple National Fiddle Competition winners, and Mabel Vogt from Idaho. Hartz told the crowd, "I'm excited to be here and come before a group that's so supportive. For us to carry this music and art form forward, we need your support," he added, as some in the crowd offered up donations or purchased CDs. Hartz performed Festival Waltz and Shuck in the Bush to a wildly enthusiastic crowd. Here's a little excerpt of this dual national champion's performance. Finally, the long-awaited announcement of the awards winners came. First, the junior winners were announced, and then the open competitors. Tom Dillon of La Mesa, who plays with a bluegrass band, took first place in the open picking category. Then, the open fiddling winner was announced, and Shira Ellison claimed the top prize, beaming from ear to ear. Afterwards, her teacher, Luke Price, shared with us how he first got interested in music. "My dad started me on guitar and banjo at 3 years old," he said, in between signing autographs from his bands. "I started classical violin at age 8. It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He said, adding, "It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He's come a long way since then, passing along the skills and joy of old-time fiddling to a new generation, including Shira Ellison, as she commences her own musical journey. You can learn fiddling and picking skills locally by signing up through julianfiddlecamp.com and listen to the talented local and national competitors at the next Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest by visiting sandiegofiddler.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.